Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for words and their stories and people in America, coming up after As It Is.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington.
And I'm Anna Mateo. In the second half of today's show, we will hear about a possible health crisis facing people in separatist areas of eastern Ukraine.
But first, we hear about more than a dozen women who died recently in India because of bad drugs.
Laboratory tests have confirmed that drugs containing poisonous chemicals killed at least 13 women and sickened many others at a government-operated camp in India.
The drugs were given to the women after doctors performed an operation to prevent them from having children. As we hear from Marcia James, the incident raises questions about such operations at health camps.
Amar Agarwal is the health minister in the Indian state of Chittagong. He says the antibiotic drug, Suproxen, was given to women who had the sterilization treatments earlier this month. He says the drug contained zinc phosphide, a chemical commonly used in rat poison. Many of the patients felt sick to the stomach. They started vomiting and reported severe pain after they went home and took the medicine. In the following days, at least 13 women died and many others became extremely sick. The state government has taken legal action against the local drug company that supplied the antibiotic used at the camp. The owner and his son were arrested on fraud charges. D.G. Shaw is Secretary General of the Indian Pharmaceutical Association. He says the tragedy calls attention to the need for increased government regulation of small companies. He says such businesses sometimes do not adhere to good manufacturing practices, what he called GMT.
They are governed by the state drug commissioners. Though on paper they say everybody is complying, they do not comply. And as has been reported in this case, in spite of poor GMP standards, the state drug commissioners had not taken adequate action for closure of this unit.
The tragedy has also turned attention to the custom of performing mass sterilizations at government-run camps. The Indian government supports use of such operations as a way to control population growth. India is home to 1.25 billion people. It is the second most populous country in the world. At the camps, doctors operate on large numbers of patients, although the government denies there is any use of force. Women are offered a monetary incentive of about $10 to have their fallopian tubes removed. The operation is called a tubectomy. Voluntary groups have raised concerns about India's sterilization program. They say Indian women are not given enough information about other methods of contraception or birth control by state health workers. They add that the workers are often under pressure to line up women to have tubectomies. Other questions have also been raised about the conditions in which the sterilizations are performed. Nibida Fukan is with the Center for Health and Social Justice, a group based in New Delhi.
You can't operate any women after 4 o'clock. And per day, not more than 35 women. Everything has been violated in this all mass sterilization camps.
About 4.5 million women were sterilized in India in the year that ended in March 2013. Observers say the latest tragedy will put the government under pressure to reconsider population control methods. I'm Marcia James.
Now we learn about a health issue in Ukraine.
The government in Ukraine is threatening to stop financial support for hospitals and medical services in areas controlled by pro-Russian separatists.
Now people living in the areas of Donetsk and Luhansk face increasing difficulties getting needed services. Jerry Watson has more on the story.
Viktor Kuchkovoy serves as health minister of the region the rebels call the Donetsk People's Republic. Right now, his decisions could affect the future of the rebellion against Ukraine's government. If the government stops paying hospitals and doctors in the east, the insurgents may face anger from people living in the Donbas area. And that is exactly what the government in Kyiv hopes will happen. Dr. Kuchkovoy says the pro-Russian fighters have been preparing for their loss of financial support. He says they are hoping to make the best of their resources. He says the fighters monitor or watch over the 193 medical centers under their control. And, he says, they direct humanitarian aid to where it is most needed. The aid comes mainly from Russia, and the medical teams in the rebel-held areas have not received their pay for months. The doctor said that, even before the announcement about halting financial aid, the government in Kyiv has been cutting support to the east. Ukraine's Prime Minister, Arseniy Yatsenyuk, defended the government decision to cut payments for public services. On his Facebook page, he blamed Russia for any suffering because he said it incited the current conflict. The United Nations says more than 4,000 people have died in the conflict in eastern Ukraine. More than 10,000 others have been wounded. It seems unclear whether the rebels can deal with the humanitarian challenges caused by the conflict in the coming weeks. Observers say the rebels in Donetsk seem better organized than those in neighboring Luhansk. A 40-year-old woman named Yulia demonstrated the mood of some residents as she stood in line for food set up by a local businessman. She said, "The aid banks operated by separatists in Donetsk give out less food than the private aid center." I'm Jerry Watson.
I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
And check us out on Facebook or our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Words and Their Stories is next, followed by People in America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
On today's Words and Their Stories, we talk about a common word, a small word, but a word that is completely necessary for human life. In fact, without this simple, everyday material, all humans would die.
Scientists know it as sodium chloride. We know it as salt. You may think salt is just a simple cooking element we shake on our food for a little extra taste. But salt is much more than that.
Without salt, our muscles would not move. Our nervous systems would not operate. Our hearts would not beat. Salt means life. But do not think rubbing salt in a wound will help. Doing that would be painful and not heal the wound. To rub salt in a wound is an idiom that means to purposefully make a bad situation worse.
Early humans got the salt they needed to stay alive from the animals they killed. But advances in agriculture led to a diet low in salt. So humans needed to find other sources.
Those who lived near the ocean or other natural sources for salt were lucky. Those who did not had to trade for salt. In fact, people used salt as a method of payment in many parts of the ancient world. The word salary comes from the word salt.
Salt also played an important part in population movement and world exploration. Explorers understood that if they could keep food fresh, they could travel longer distances. So they used salt to preserve food and explored the world. Salt meant movement.
Salt also changed the way nations fought. With preserved food on ships, nations could sail to distant lands and then attack them. Salt meant power.
Salt was so important that, according to food historians, it was traded pound for gold. Today, people still use the expressions to be worth one's salt or worth one's weight in salt. The expressions describe a person who is useful, a person of value.
A person might also be called salt of the earth. That description means he or she is dependable and trustworthy. The phrase comes from the Christian Bible. Jesus called his loyal group of followers, or disciples, the salt of the earth.
But one of these disciples was not so loyal. The disciple Judas betrayed Jesus. In his famous painting, The Last Supper, Leonardo da Vinci shows Judas spilling a bowl of salt. Spilled salt is a sign of bad luck and trouble. And trouble is exactly what Judas gave Jesus.
Even today, some people throw salt over one shoulder if they spill it. They believe throwing salt behind them scares any devil that has been following them, or at least blinds it for a second while they run away.
But these stories about bad luck should be taken with a grain of salt. In other words, listen to a story or an explanation with suspicion and distrust.
But you don't have to take the information you find on VOA Learning English with a grain of salt. We do our research.
And this research led to some interesting facts about salt in other cultures and religions. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Join us again for another Words and Their Stories, where we take a deeper look at words in American English.
Thank you. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about Katharine Hepburn, one of America's great film and stage actresses. Hepburn's career lasted almost 70 years. During that time, she made more than 50 films. She became known all over the world for her independence, sharp intelligence, and acting ability. Katharine Hepburn holds the record for the most Academy Awards for Best Actress. She won the honor 4 times. This star holds a special place in American film and popular culture.
Katharine Houghton Hepburn was born in Hartford, Connecticut in 1907. She came from a wealthy and highly educated family. Her father, Thomas Hepburn, was a successful doctor. Her mother, Katharine Martha Houghton, was a great supporter of women's rights issues, including the right to birth control. The Hepburns made sure to educate their children about important political and social subjects. The family members were not afraid to express their liberal opinions.
Dr. Hepburn also believed in the importance of intense exercise. For most of her life, Kate was an excellent athlete. She rode horses, swam, and played golf and tennis. Here is a recording of Katharine Hepburn from a film about her life. She is talking about the values her family taught her. She says she is not strange, but is fearless.
I don't think I'm an eccentric. No, I'm just something from New England that was very American and brought up by two extremely intelligent people who gave us a kind of, I think, the greatest gift that man can give anyone, and that is sort of freedom from fear.
Katharine graduated from Bryn Mawr College in Pennsylvania in 1928. She soon started appearing in small roles in plays on Broadway in New York City. That year, she also married a businessman named Ludlow Ogden Smith. Their marriage lasted only a few years. But Katharine later said Ludlow's support was very important to her during the early part of her career.
Katharine Hepburn was not the usual kind of actress during this period. She had a thin and athletic body. She spoke with a clear East Coast accent, and she was very independent in her thoughts and actions. For example, she wore men's pants as clothing at a time when women wore only skirts or dresses. Sometimes her independence and liberal opinions got her in trouble. After a few successful plays in New York, Hollywood filmmakers became interested in her. She later signed with the film production company called RKO Pictures. Her first movie came out in 1932.
The next year, she made the film Morning Glory. In her role as Eva Lovelace, Hepburn plays a stage actress fighting for a successful career. Few directors are interested in her, but by the end of the movie, she has a chance to let her acting skills shine, and she becomes a star. This movie earned Hepburn her first Academy Award for Best Actress. Here is a recording from the movie. Hepburn's character, Eva, tells about how she has changed her name in preparation for being a great actress. She talks very quickly, but you can sense the energy behind her performance.
I hope you're going to tell me your name. I want you for my first friend in New York. Mine's Eva Lovelace. It's partly made up and partly real. It was Ada Love. Love's my family name. I added the lace. Do you like it, or would you prefer something shorter? A shorter name would be more convenient on a sign, still, Eva Lovelace and Camille, for instance, or Eva Lovelace and Romeo and Juliet sounds very distinguished, doesn't it? I don't want to use my family name because I should probably have several scandals while I live, and I don't want to cause them any trouble until I'm famous when nobody will mind. That's why I must decide on something at once while there's still time before I'm famous.
During the 1930s, critics either loved or hated Katharine Hepburn. Some thought she was a fresh and exciting addition to the Hollywood industry. Others decided she was too bold and self-important. They thought her way of speaking sounded false. But Hepburn wanted to face the movie industry in her own way. She liked to play the roles of strong women. She did not want to be like other actresses. She did not wear makeup on her face. She would not let photographers take sexy pictures of her. And she did not like talking to her fans or the media.
Katharine Hepburn continued to work very hard making movies. Yet, by the late 1930s, she had become unpopular with the public. So movie producers stopped wanting her in their films. But Hepburn was not raised to quit easily. She decided to return to the stage on Broadway in New York City. She starred in a play called The Philadelphia Story. Hepburn's friend, Philip Barry, wrote the play especially for her. It is about a wealthy and intelligent woman named Tracy Lord. She is about to marry a man she does not love. In the movie, she learns to be more honest with herself and others. She decides to marry a man from her past whom she has always loved.
The play was a great success. Hepburn immediately bought the legal rights to the play. She knew The Philadelphia Story would be made into a movie, and she wanted to make sure she was the star of the film version. In 1940, The Philadelphia Story became a great movie success. Hepburn received another Academy Award nomination for Best Actress. She had taken control of her career once again, and she would stay in control of it from then on. Here is a recording from The Philadelphia Story. Katharine Hepburn's character, Tracy Lord, is talking with her new friend, Macaulay Connor, a writer. She has just read his book and discovered something surprising about him.
These stories are beautiful. Why, Connor, they're almost poetry.
Well, don't kid yourself, they are.
I can't make you out at all now.
Really? I thought I was easy.
So did I. But you're not. You talk so big and tough, and then you write like this. Which is which?
Both, I guess.
No, I believe you put the toughness on to save your skin.
Well, you think so?
I know a little about that.
In 1942, Katharine Hepburn starred in Woman of the Year. This was the first of 9 movies she starred in with actor Spencer Tracy. They would soon become a famous couple, both on and off the movie screen. Usually their movies dealt with finding a balance of power between their two strong characters. Hepburn and Tracy had a magical energy when they acted together, but in real life, they kept their love hidden from the public. Spencer Tracy was married to another woman. For religious reasons, he would not end his marriage and divorce his wife. So Hepburn and Tracy led a secret love affair for more than 20 years. Catherine Hepburn had had other love interests. She once had a relationship with the famous American millionaire Howard Hughes. But Spencer Tracy remained the love of her life.
One of Katharine Hepburn's most famous roles was in the movie The African Queen. She made this movie in 1951 with the famous actor Humphrey Bogart. In the film, their two very different characters fall in love on a riverboat in the middle of Africa. As Katharine Hepburn became older, she played more and more wise and complex characters. In 1967, she starred in her last movie with Spencer Tracy. He died a few weeks after filming ended. For this movie, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, she won her second Academy Award. She won her third Academy Award the next year for A Lion in Winter. And in her mid-70s, she won her last Academy Award for On Golden Pond.
Even into her 80s, Katharine Hepburn kept working. She had roles in several movies and television programs. She also wrote several books, including one about her life. In 2003, Katharine Hepburn died. She was 96 years old. As part of her last wishes, she helped create the Katharine Houghton Hepburn Center at Bryn Mawr College. This program helps support the things that were important to her: film and theater, women's rights, and civic responsibility.
An actor who worked with Katharine Hepburn once said that she brought with her an extra level of reality. He said that when she was near, everything became more interesting, intense, and bright. This intensity and intelligence shine in the films that Katharine Hepburn made over her lifetime. People still enjoy her films today. Katharine Hepburn's work and personality have had a great influence on American film and culture.
This program was written and produced by Dana Demange. You can download this program and others from our website, voaspecialenglish.com. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.